We're right here, Sharp Passage Gallery, this morning right here in Greenwood. And on the phone with me is Lieutenant Governor Glenn McConnell. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Ann. It's always good to talk with you and to be on your show also.
Absolutely. It is tremendous. You know, I tell you what, when you had to take over that office, I think you thought 2 years and you'd be out of there. But I tell you what, you have become a powerhouse in that office.
Well, thank you, ma'am. This job, when I came in here, as I explained on your air, I was not a happy guy on that day because I'd lost my Senate seat and all my seniority. But quickly, was I started seeing the problems that this office had, and the folks that were going without, and the giant gray tsunami coming, and everything else, it turned into a job really of love and an excitement for the challenges, and now it's spread to helping those families, those caregivers all across South Carolina, for instance, who donate their time and their effort to keep their loved ones, people with special needs, disabilities, and chronic illnesses at home, because again, it's almost 10 times cheaper for them to stay at home for a family than it is to put them into an institution. And then if they go into an institution, they quickly go through their assets, and then they're on Medicaid, and then we wonder why we have the exploding cost of Medicaid. And so we have an opportunity, I think, to reshape South Carolina's future and meet this tidal wave of challenge that's coming. And so I've kind of embraced that and said, look, one door closed, another opened, and now I find myself immersed in trying to take this big arc and make a change and make sure that there's a future for these folks in South Carolina that's good for the golden years.
Oh, you are absolutely right. And I didn't realize that you have personal experience of this because of your mother with Alzheimer's.
Yes, I've seen Alzheimer's face on, and I think Nancy Reagan called it the longest farewell. And that's what it is. You sit there and slowly say goodbye to your loved one as you watch them disappear month by month into Alzheimer's, and eventually it consumes them to the point that they don't even know you, and they go through different stages of it. And it's very hard on a family, and families across South Carolina, they try to keep these folks at home as long as they can. And again, to go back, not be redundant, but to make the point that the estimate for home care costs for a family is usually around $6,500 if they can keep them at home. If they have to put them into an institution, a semi-private room in South Carolina, that's around $67,000. So you can see a family, if they had to put their loved one in, it would quickly go through their assets if they don't have the money to do that. So the idea is, how do you be proactive on the front end, give people what they want, the opportunity to stay at home, manage their assets so that they don't become wards of the state and end up on Medicaid. And again, it's a case of, we need to have strategies, we need to have strategic thinking in that particular regard, and that's what I hope that I have brought to the Lieutenant Governor's office, because that's the direction we're moving in. And I've asked the legislature to buy in on it. Everybody says, how do we control Medicaid costs? How do we control medical costs? How do we control the budget? You do it by being proactive on the front end and avoiding the acute care until it becomes absolutely necessary on the back end. For instance, there are about 770,000 South Carolinians who are serving as caregivers across the state. If imagine what would happen if they quit doing that, and these people begin migrating into the Medicaid nursing beds, which have a two-year waiting list even now. That would run the taxpayers around $52,000 a year per bed.
Well, not only
and
that.
So our idea is, how do we break that migration? The other side of this, Ann, is we've also been reaching out to nonprofits and faith-based, and also looking to the prophets across South Carolina, how can we partner and, for instance, with seniors, make more resources available and not come to the taxpayers, because the taxpayers don't have the money, and we have to realize that. And one of the things that just recently happened is Leadership South Carolina, their 2013 class, I made a speech to them about the challenges of aging. They took it on as their annual project this year. They raised over $100,000 for awareness of senior issues, including senior hunger, which is a real problem in South Carolina. About 1 in 11 seniors goes hungry. And then they turned the Honda of South Carolina, got motivated into it. They've donated two Odyssey minivans from the Honda Motor Corporation for senior centers. And so together, what we've been able to do is partner with private assets and create greater opportunities in the community for senior resources.
You know, it's tremendous. But, you know, one of the points I was just thinking about, you said if all the people that are being taken care of by the 770,000, if they went on to become wards of the state, become Medicaid, we don't even have the beds. We couldn't even handle it. So what would happen to these people? They'd be out on the streets, wouldn't they, Glenn?
And that's an excellent question, and you hit the nail on the head. You're exactly right. We don't have the beds for them. What they're doing is valued at around $7.4 billion. The key with these folks is to keep them from burning out. And it really is a multi-level strategy. A, you got to create resources on what we call home and community base for adult daycare centers. And this is where some of the faith-based organizations come in. Churches provide them as a place they can take that loved one while they go themselves to the doctor or while they go grocery shopping or have to handle things. The other way is with what we call respite care vouchers and programs like that, where you give them a voucher they can use to get somebody to come in and watch that loved one while they go take a break and do things they need to do. If that keeps them healthy, that keeps them physically and mentally on the job, prevents them from burning out, and prevents that on-the-street migration from occurring. So you can see, I think if you just look at it, it all makes sense, and it's a way to bring together the private and public sectors and create resources which allow us in South Carolina to do things efficiently and cost-effective.
You know, I couldn't agree more. I was reading the report that y'all put out about some of the families and what they deal with day in and day out. And, you know, one of the problems is right now I think you get one 500 voucher, and, of course, they're fearful to use that voucher because they never know when they might really use it. But the other thing, the guilt that they feel in taking a break, we need to make it so that people don't feel that guilt.
And, again, you... You've done some good research on this because you're dead on the money about that. They do feel they're scared to use the voucher because they're scared they're going to need it, if even worse than what they do need it for. Secondly, they have that attitude about they feel guilty about doing it. And yet, if they don't take it, we have studies and studies that indicate they'll burn out. If their health gets shaken by the stress of it and everything, then we got a double problem. So it's one of those cases of how do we encourage a healthy attitude, don't feel guilty about it. It's a way of saying thank you for reaching out and helping others. We've got, for instance, in this state, there are over 387,000 children and youth with one or more special health care needs. The statistics I've seen indicate about 15% of our population has a disability of some form. But when you get to these families with Alzheimer's, and then these adult children that have disabilities, it could have come from accident, birth, or whatever, these families are reaching out and trying to make it. And what we're trying to do is make sure that they have an opportunity to make it and that they do not migrate over to the Medicaid system, because the Medicaid system, we just cannot afford to continue doing the same thing and expecting a different result. We've got to look for what I call strategies which decrease our expenditures and yet create the helping hand, because these families across South Carolina, they're not looking for handouts. They're looking for a helping hand to make it. They want to remain independent. They want to remain in their homes, and that's what this is about.
Absolutely. But, you know, the other thing I was amazed at is this is the Lieutenant Governor's Office, the Office of Aging, and yet you've taken on the whole system from children through aging adults.
Well, what happened is we've partnered around the state with groups from the Alzheimer's Association to the different organizations for children. Another thing, we all came together on how lifespan respite care can work and be a great asset for South Carolina, and that's what kind of got us in that particular area. And then we also deal with adults with disabilities, with challenges in the Office on Aging. That comes through the Older Americans Act and through mandates that we get in the federal laws. So that's kind of how we got into it. It wasn't that we were looking to just expand our role, but in our partnering with these parents and people all across South Carolina, it was a natural fit coalition together because we need to create an awareness. We don't want somebody coming back and trying to claim this is some sort of welfare or giveaway program when it's not. It's a program that enhances independence, family happiness, stay at home, not become a ward of the state.
You are so right, and you have hit the nail on it right there, Lieutenant Governor Glenn McConnell. Now, what is the status? Don't you have a bill down there that is before some budgeting funding that looks pretty good that could happen?
It does, and we are right now close to getting the money. They'll go to conference this week and next week on the state appropriations bill. But they have agreed to fund the respite care program because it makes such sense. We had overwhelming support in the House and the Senate, a bipartisan support on that. And and then in the case of when I inherited this office, we got 8,000 seniors on a waiting list that need a meal a day to stay in their home because they can't cook, they're blind, they're bedridden or whatever. And we have gotten the money right now in both bills to close that waiting list as far as we can do it efficiently in 1 year. And I told them I would not ask for any money that I could not efficiently handle in 1 year with the structure that we have. And but our key is to close that waiting list. When I was on your program before, you know, I made the point about the people. I've met seniors without legs who had no way to cook, that one meal a day has given them the physical strength to pull themselves out of a bed and get in a wheelchair. These are important things. When they do that, when we're able to keep them healthy and physically strong, to get them to doctors with preventive health care, we again keep them out of those Medicaid beds. And when we do, it's $52,000 a year to Medicaid bed versus $1,400 a year to keep them out. It just makes good business sense. It's the humanitarian thing to do. It's the neighborly thing to do. It's what I call good creative government, partnering with the private sector.
You know, it makes a lot of sense. It's too bad we can't take that all the way up the chain to Washington, D.C.
They could sure use some up there, couldn't they?
They absolutely could. Well, let me just ask you a couple other questions. How has it been? You're over the Senate. How has it been to be in that position?
Well, it's interesting. I get to sit there and watch the personalities debate and the issues debate. The frustrating part for me, having served down there for 31 and a half years, I can't get in the debate, which I was used to for over 31 years getting in it. But what I have done is I've made it very clear that on points of order, that enforcing the rules, and when a point of order is raised about amendments, for instance, somebody trying to put non-germane matter on a bill, I've told them that I will apply the same standard to them that I applied to myself, and that is strict construction of the black letter law of the Constitution and the statutes and the rules of the Senate. So with that, what I've done is try to be consistent, and my rulings are not based on whether I want to see something pass or not pass, but based on the rule of law has got to be absolute, and it cannot be a zigzag around where the ends justify the means. To me, it is important that the Constitution be what it is and not what people want to twist it to be, the same with the laws and the rules of the Senate. So I've ruled out of order quite a few amendments that were attempts to put non-germane matters, for instance, on the appropriations bill or do bobtail, which is to take a totally separate matter and try to bobtail it on the back of a bill when it has nothing to do with it, and the Constitution is very clear that a bill should be a single subject. If you read about it, it's, for instance, about mortgage brokers. It ought to be about mortgage brokers. It shouldn't be about payday lending. And so from that standpoint, and I've also tried to, as a presiding official, put some formality and decorum back in the chamber to make sure that that the Senate performs its role as a deliberative body.
Absolutely. Now, how do you feel about the budget coming forth, coming down? You've only got a couple of weeks left, and this will all be wrapped up and hopefully done.
Hopefully, the conference committee will be meeting here in the next week. I'm confident that they will get close to it. The sine die, it's a type of resolution. What happens under our laws and our Constitution, the General Assembly usually adjourns what we call sine die. The first Thursday in June. Then they extend it 2 weeks later for about a week or so to come back and handle the gubernatorial vetoes on the budget and to receive conference committee reports and wrap up the year's business. I'm confident that will occur as far as the appropriations bill is concerned, and it's very important to us because we really, as soon as we can get out of here, we want to get back to the face of agent tour, to get out there and be out there. And as we start trying to pick up, we want to see how we're doing. I'm trying to redo our structure, and sometime in the future, I'd love to come in and talk with you about what we call strategic planning. Well, we've sat down and taken a critical look at ourselves. What are our strengths, our weaknesses? What do we consider obstacles to getting the job done? And then we developed a set of seven goals, then we developed strategies to those goals, and now we're assigning the duties all the way down our organization so that we run an efficient, accountable organization that together is a team at what we're trying to do, which is to turn and prepare for the great tsunami. So it's something maybe in the future, but this budget is essential to us because of the folks we've seen on the face of agent tour that are out there suffering. Look, hunger in this state, people may not know it, but 1 in 11 seniors in this state is at risk for hunger. And about one-third of the seniors in the state live on Social Security alone.
It's tragic, isn't it?
It really is. And it's but, you know, we have an opportunity to do better, and it just thanks to organizations like Leadership South Carolina, the class of 2013. I met last week with a representative from the faith-based community to look at how we get that perspective into the strategies and the resources to interlink so that people can access those resources. They're not government, but they can go to a government website and learn that those resources are out there. And some of what we come across, Ann, is communication, and one of the great things about your show and shows like yours is that it brings some of these resources or where you can find them to the public to go look for them. And there are things out there, for instance, they can access that they may not know about.
Absolutely. Well, listen, you know, I tell you what, the Office on Aging couldn't have done any better than to have you at the helm of it, Lieutenant Governor Glenn McConnell. Thank you so much for coming on here today.
Well, Ann, thank you for inviting me, and thank you for your remarks, and I hope we live up in every way to your expectations for what we're doing, and we're going to give it our best shot.
Absolutely. And the next time you're in Greenwood, make sure you let us know so we can have you on the show.
You got it. I'll be there.
All right. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you, Ann.
All right. Thank you.